I didn't like these jobs. Sometimes rolling worked, and sometimes it didn't, and in those days we hadn't quite got round to performing caesareans on cows. If I was unsuccessful, I had the prospect of telling Mr. Alderson to send Candy to the butcher. I banished the thought quickly. "I'll put everything right," I said. I had to. I stationed Bert at the front legs, Stan at the hind, and the farmer holding the cow's head on the floor. Then I stretched myself on the hard concrete, pushed in a hand, and grasped the calf's foot. "Now, roll her," I gasped, and the men pulled the legs round in a clockwise direction. I held fiercely to the little feet as the cow flopped onto her other side. Nothing seemed to be happening inside. "Push her onto her chest," I panted. Stan and Bert expertly tucked the legs under the cow and rolled her onto her brisket, and as she settled there, I gave a yell of pain. "Get her back, quick! We're going the wrong way!" The smooth band of tissue had tightened on my wrist in a numbing grip of frightening power. For a moment, I had the panicking impression that I'd never get out of there again. But the men worked like lightning. Within seconds, Candy was stretched out on her original side. The pressure was off my arm, and we were back where we started. I gritted my teeth and took a fresh grip on the calf's foot. "Okay. Try her the other way." This time the roll was anti-clockwise, and we went through 180 degrees without anything happening. I only just kept my grasp on the foot. The resistance this time was tremendous. Taking a breather for a few seconds, I lay face down while the sweat sprang out on my back, sending out fresh exotic vapours from the bath salts. "Right. One more go," I cried, and the men hauled the cow further over. And oh, it was beautiful to feel everything magically unravelling, and my arm lying free in a wide uterus with all the room in the world, and the calf already beginning to slide towards me. Candy summed up the situation immediately, and for the first time she gave a determined, heaving strain. Sensing victory just round the corner, she followed up with another prolonged effort which popped the calf, wet and wriggling, into my arms. "By gum, it was cricket finish," Mr. Alderson murmured wonderingly. He seized a wisp of hay and began to dry off the little creature. Thankfully, I soaked my arms in one of the buckets. After every delivery, there is a feeling of relief, but in this case, it was overwhelming. It no longer mattered that the loose box smelt like a lady's hairdressing salon. I just felt good. I said goodnight to Bert and Stan as they returned to their beds, giving a final incredulous sniff as they passed me. Mr. Alderson was pottering about, having a word with Candy, then starting again on the calf, which he had already rubbed down several times. He seemed fascinated by it. And I couldn't blame him, because it was like something out of Disney. A pale gold fawn, unbelievably tiny, with large, dark, limpid eyes, and an expression of trusting innocence. It was a heifer, too. The farmer lifted it as if it were a whippet dog and laid it by the mother's head. Candy nosed the little animal over, rumbling happily in her throat. Then she began to lick it. I watched Mr. Alderson. He was standing, hands clasped behind him, rocking backwards and forwards on his heels, obviously enchanted by the scene. "Any time now," I thought. And I was right. The tuneless humming broke out, even louder than usual, like a joyful paean. I stiffened in my Wellingtons. There would never be a better time. After a nervous cough, I spoke up firmly. "Mr. Alderson," I said, and he half-turned his head. "I would like to marry your daughter." The humming was switched off abruptly, and he turned slowly till he was facing me. He didn't speak, but his eyes searched my face, unhappily. Then he bent stiffly, picked up the buckets one by one, tipped out the water, and made for the door. "You better come in the house," he said. The farmhouse kitchen looked lost and forsaken with the family abed. I sat in a high-backed wooden chair by the side of the empty hearth while Mr. Alderson put away his buckets, hung up the towel and washed his hands methodically at the sink. Then he pottered through to the parlour and I heard him bumping and clinking about in the sideboard. When he reappeared, he bore a tray in front of him on which a bottle of whiskey and two glasses rattled gently. The tray lent the simple procedure an air of formality, which was accentuated by the heavy-cut crystal of the glasses and the virgin, unopened state of the bottle. Mr. Alderson set the tray down on the kitchen table, which he dragged nearer to us before settling in the chair at the other side of the fireplace. Nobody said anything. I waited in the lengthening silence while he peered at the cap of the bottle like a man who had never seen one before, then unscrewed it with a slow apprehension as though he feared it might blow up in his face. Finally, he poured out two measures with the utmost gravity and precision, ducking his head frequently to compare the levels in the two glasses, and with a last touch of ceremony, proffered the laden tray. I took my drink and waited expectantly.